Thank you for staying with us on Consider This. Melissa and Sharad here this evening. Now, we're continuing our conversation about Malaysia's testing capacity with Dr. Nirmala Bupati, Public Health Medicine Specialist with University Malaya. Dr. Nirmala, before the break, you mentioned that based just using infection rate alone is not enough to decide when to lift the MCO. In fact, you say that as an epidemiologist, it's too soon to lift the MCO. If it's not the infection rate, then Dr. Nirmala, what should it be based on?
We need to make sure that the infection rates have come down. Yes, that's one of the criteria. But we must also look at the readiness. So the Director General of Health has already outlined what WHO has said before in terms of the readiness that we are talking about. But let me also scale back, because I think while my topic is talking about targeted testing and so on, I think we cannot undermine the importance of physical distancing measures, for instance. So if we think about lifting the MCO, we need to put into consideration from several aspects. So from the social responsibility aspect that we expect from our population, we need to make sure that the public are very clear about physical distancing. Are they well aware? And they have had some sort of training, because over the past few months, we have been on MCO. So we need to ensure that the public will go on, because we don't want to let them have this false sense of security or early celebration, because I would like to use those words, because it seems that there is a trend going on in the media that people are seeing that this lowering of infection rates as a sign of success. Yes, it's a sign of success, but it's too early to celebrate. So we have to make sure that the public keep up with their social responsibility. So physical distancing, hand hygiene, and avoiding of crowded spaces. And this last avoiding of crowded spaces is so crucial, because now we are in the month of Ramadan. And Ramadan is a great game changer. I've mentioned this before. And because we have Muslims and non-Muslims celebrating Ramadan, so even the non-Muslims, so we are going to have people who would be inclined to attend opening, buka puasa and so on. So from the social responsibility aspect, we must ensure that the public keep on doing what is right from a social aspect. But from the government sectors, because we are now talking about returning to work and businesses opening up. So we must ensure that the right protocols are in place. And this right protocol not only talks about returning to work, but also use of public transport. And we are also advocating that people wear masks. So, and some of them may have to wear more than just masks. They might have to wear a shield,
A face shield.
We must make sure that protocols are in place to ensure that these people who are using these protective equipment like masks and so on, whether they know how to keep them clean, how to maintain hygiene. So these are things that at systems level, from the government sectors and the employer side, we must make sure that these protocols are developed. I have heard that there are many, many protocols being developed, but it's not enough that it's just developed, but we also need engagement. So people who are going to be subjected to those protocols, do they understand it? Is there any... is there going to be a challenge implementing these protocols?
Right.
These are things that will require some amount of time to think and may require a week or so to adjust.
Sorry to interrupt you there, but can we talk a little, because time's running out, can we talk a little bit about the high-risk group? Because one of the concerns is that many of us might be asymptomatic, might feel fine, and therefore endanger other people. And I'm thinking about, older folk and so on, all that's been in the media about who is the high-risk. But do we actually know how to calibrate what high risk is? I mean, do you have to have some chronic disease, or could you just be a healthy older person? Are you also in the high risk group? How do we understand that notion of protecting people in high risk groups?
Okay, thank you for the question. When we talk about high risk, right, the evidence has been changing. So right in the beginning, we thought that people who are elderly are at risk. And then with new evidence, scientific evidence, and we know that people who have diabetes or hypertension, they are at risk. And so as the evidence is building up, we need to be more inclusive. So that was what I was referring before. And also in the past, when we were talking about testing, we were talking only about people with symptoms. And now you are bringing in about people who are asymptomatic. So we will never be able to address people who are asymptomatic completely unless we perform mass testing and we do it repeatedly. That's for sure. But even when we do mass testing and repeatedly, there's always a risk of missing people who are having asymptomatic infections. And the fear is not so much about people who are asymptomatic, but because they are going to infect another person. Mm. And for that, we don't need testing alone. Physical distancing measures, hand hygiene, and proper education. These are things that can prevent an asymptomatic person from infecting a vulnerable person.
Right.
So that's why I was harping on the protocols just now and social responsibility and so on. So testing is not a standalone strategy, but it needs to go hand in hand with all other public health measures. And with that, we will be able to deal with these people who are asymptomatic, who goes walking around undetected in the population.
Very good. Thank you so much, Dr. Nirmala. That was a very informative, very enlightening conversation. We really appreciate your time. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have on this episode of Consider This. We must have you back for a longer conversation. I'm Melissa Idris with Misha Radkutan signing off for tonight. Thank you so much for watching and have a great evening, folks.